hello everybody to this episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and today we have a special episode. We have Representative Mark Tacano, who represents the people of Riverside, Moreno Valley, Jurupa Valley, and Paris in California's 39th Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives. Congressman Tacano serves as ranking member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs and as a member of the Education and the Workforce Committee. Representative Tacano has served in Congress since 2013, and he's recently introduced a bill called the 32-Hour Workweek Act. Now, if passed into law, it would require overtime pay for anyone who works more than 32 hours in 1 week and not the 40 hours required today. Now, I'll turn it over to Jack to ask if we're anywhere closer to a four-day workweek.
So, what do you think? Do you think this time it's going to work in 32 hours?
We're one step closer. If we were on, use the football analogy.
Yeah.
I would say we started on the 20, around there. I say we're getting closer to, say, midfield. We're not in field goal range yet, but we are definitely gaining ground. And where we've gained ground is I think there's greater public openness. We're seeing figures such as former President Obama say AI is definitely going to change our workforce, transform it, and we need to start talking about ideas such as the shorter work week now. That's not some obscure member of Congress like me. That's a former president of the United States who has the ear of a lot of people. Folks who have a lot of credibility in the business world, Jamie Dimon and Bill Gates have pretty much said that we should start looking at a future where we're working actually even shorter hours than 4 days a week. You know, Wall Street is going crazy, crazy in a good way. We've seen record sort of highs this past few months. What's the reason? All this speculation over what AI is going to do to profitability and profits. So Sam Altman was here in the Congress at a time when AI was the beginning of the buzz. He was invited by bipartisan leadership and in the bipartisan briefing, the big auditorium we have here. And I remember a Republican member, one of my colleagues, going up to the microphone and really concerned. He goes, "I'm really concerned that America is developing this underclass of people who don't want to work. And, this really concerns me." And Sam Altman's response was, "Well, I'm not really concerned about that problem." Mm-hmm. He says, "Because, the technology, AI, is going to make it possible for us to work a lot less." The night before, my friend Ted Lieu, who is a supporter of the four-day work week, had hosted Sam. I wasn't able to make that dinner. But I ran over to Ted after this comment was made, and I said, "Ted, did I just hear Sam Altman endorse my legislation?" And Ted says, "Well, last night somebody asked him, what do you think about the, a four-day work week?" And his response, cheekily, in a very cheeky way, says, "Well, what do you think about a one-day work week?" obviously, we don't all have crystal balls, but I think there's a general sense. I sense that the news about the impact of artificial intelligence on our workforce was going to present another argument for a shorter work week, and it did. I mean, there was a new interest in the media about the 4 day work week, and Bernie Sanders just had a hearing on it, and AI was one of the arguments brought up. That I think has gained some currency, but it's not the only argument. There are other major arguments for why we should be seriously considering this.
It's interesting you bring this up. And a year or so ago, before AI really started, being deployed, if I had to write an article about the 4 day work week, it would take me several hours to get all the data, get all the information, figure it all out. Now, just as a refresher, because I've been writing about it. About what was going on in Iceland and Scotland and England and all these other countries that are doing it. And now I could do an article in record time compared, like, instead of spending hours and hours. And that's just one example of how to be more productive. I can write more articles. I could do other things. I can leave my, you know, have a life, as opposed to before, where you're just spending so many hours, and multiply that by all sorts of other professionals who are doing the same thing.
You cite an example which I think illustrates the power of technology to make people more productive. The fact that technology before AI was doing that, computers, more advanced machinery, manufacturing techniques, all of this has meant that you can do a lot more work with less people. And it's across sectors. You can talk about agriculture, the mechanization of agriculture. There's like high-tech agriculture. It used to be that a huge portion of our population was involved in food production. Now it's a very tiny fraction of our population involved in food production. And so the question we need to be asking is, technology has brought humanity to a place where we can ask the question, how much time does everybody need to work? And does the model of the investors in technology, the investors in the machinery, the people who've had capital, people in power, does all of that, the gains from that productivity, does all of it get extracted and put into the service of that small elite of people? Should we be arranging? Can we collectively decide that model has its limitations? Because there's a big contradiction. All of that profit just gets extracted and is only for the control of the wealthy. Then who's going to buy all the stuff that this productivity has made possible? I mean, how is there going to be enough individuals out there with the sort of income that constitutes sort of these mass markets, right? It's not going to work out if huge numbers of our population are stuck with, you know, no income or very little income. President Obama talked last fall about two ideas. He said, well, we should be looking at universal basic income, and we should be looking at a shorter work week. Now, he didn't say we should do this tomorrow. He says, but AI is going to cause us to confront this issue, and we should start talking about these ideas now. But that's where we are right now. We're at the kind of, hey, we may be at a place where this idea is something that is really a serious topic, and we ought to be looking at how we get there. There, I want to be careful here, because there are economists, notably people like Paul Krugman, who say, well, let's not run around too frantically about what AI is going to do to the number of jobs. You know, we were worried about the advent of computers and the digitization of everything, and it actually had the effect of creating more jobs. But I think we've seen a trend among Western liberal economies, advanced market economies, especially in Europe, where there is a movement toward shorter work weeks for people.
And Mark, does this factor in your pitch to your fellow congressmen and senators? There have been so many people I see who are Gen Zs who you could tell a lot of them just seem having almost like mental issue breakdowns, because they're like, hey, I'm waking up super early in the morning, commuting into, you know, New York City or another big, you know, whatever said big city. The time you get home, you have like, you're exhausted. You don't have enough time to do anything. And with inflation and high costs, it's very frustrating. And they feel like, wait a minute, this American dream we were promised, I have to pay back all these student loans that I can't afford. I'm working all the time. I really don't have any downtime. And I wonder, with having a 4-day work week or 32 hours or however it's ultimately structured, do you think that would be helpful for the mental health and emotional well-being of people? Does that make any sense? Does that resonate?
Well, it does make sense. Yeah. And there's a generational divide over this, because I see people more my age, classmates from college, you know, who maybe own companies. They literally said, we should stop talking so much to each other, because You're proposing ideas that I'm just not really in attuned with. And it was an owner of a medium-sized company. And so there is this sense that, well, I had to go work like 50 hours a week in my 20s.
See, yeah. Exactly. And they're like, because I did it, you have to do it too, which to me is always nuts, because just because you did something.
No, it's a version. It's a version. I trudged through, like, you know, I had to walk 5 miles to school. No, it's a different version of that we were told by, you know, my grandfather or people before would talk about that. And I think that is silly. What I talk about is harnessing technology for humanity. The human, that a shorter work week is about the greater happiness of mankind or humankind. We have choices to make as a society about whether we're going to allow technology to put us in the service of it, or whether it really serves all of us. And I mean all of us, because the conversations about a shorter work week are kind of most intense among, I think, professionals, among highly trained people. It's not really something that people who work in a factory, who are on the clock, who have to punch on a time card, service workers, who are subject to the Fair Labor Standards Act, which says you can't work more than 40 hours a week without getting overtime pay. It's the people who are exempt from the law who are benefiting from the advances in technology the most. You know, I was recently talking to a friend of mine who's on the board of a hospital. And these are conversations that are happening in boardrooms, knowing that future pediatricians and future doctors are not going to be interested in working the kind of hours that previous generations of doctors have worked, and that they're going to have to plan to hire a larger doctor workforce as a result. That's the kind of conversation that's happening. This same person was telling me, look, you know, he's a lawyer. He says Monday through Thursday, he can't get a parking spot. There's competition for parking, and it's always full. But on Friday, a lot less issue of getting the parking spot. What is the point of that story? Already, there's a kind of culture in America among our elites of half a day off of Friday, or Friday is kind of considered not a full work day. The question is, how are we going to provide for the other parts of America that really do work 40 hours a week and has to work 40 hours a week? They should benefit from the fruits of efficiency and the fruits of all of what technology is doing and for our society.
Tell me if I'm crazy here, but what we all see, we're in a society now where everyone's frustrated, they're anxious, they're stressed. Wouldn't a simple answer be, you can get a 3-day weekend? How great would that be for people in terms of their mental outlook, their well-being, to calm down, to have some just quiet time?
I think there are always trade-offs with things that there are people aren't considering also what might happen to the economy in a different aspect. Some business people are just saying, well, this is going to make it harder for me in the labor markets. Let me just point out that, you know, the idea of going to dinner on Friday night before, you know, there was not really this idea of a weekend before we kind of institutionalized the idea of a weekend in law, right? People regularly worked more than 40 hours a week. So think about if Thursday becomes the new Friday, what does that do to the hospitality industry? What does that do to restauranting? What does that do to consumerism? You know, going shopping is not something you do just on a Saturday or a Sunday. So on the one side, where you propose that we have an improvement in health, so physical and mental health, the ability of people to take care of children, elders, to be involved in their community, you know, everybody. The other side of it is that we don't know how it's also going to change commerce. You know, this is a change that I think is going to be unbalanced positive.
You know, I like your point about the consumer aspect, because let's be frank, the American consumer is the biggest portion of the economy, and people love to spend. So if you have an extra day, that you could do your shopping. It's and stimulate the economy because you're out there. So it's net positive, I think. It almost seems kind of the same argument about when we, during the pandemic, everyone went, you know, remote, and then we come back, and now they're saying, come back to the office. And then now you almost see the same thing where the people who were the bosses in the office, like, you got to come back. And the workers like, wait a minute, we were pretty productive and we did really well, but being remote, why can't we keep
it? The pandemic really liberalized and opened up the technology we're using today. I mean, prior to the pandemic, there would have been this sort of some media organizations had the wherewithal and money to send a car to pick me, the congressman, up and take me to the studio. But post-pandemic, this kind of interview is, you know, something that's quite regular. It's not unusual. I was speaking to a litigator friend of mine. He says the courts have fundamentally changed. This is another kind of development, how our culture, how our work culture is changing. And I think a shorter work week is something that, as we said, is going to be a positive thing. It's going to be something that unleashes creativity as well. You know, one of the things that my late mother did after she transitioned from a job, which was being a financial advisor and spending a lot of time in the office, is she opened up her own knitting store, in a way created a business and a space where people got to be creative, and she got to explore what she called fiber arts. You don't know what people are going to do with the extra time that they have. It may be that they go ski more. It may be that they go lie in the sun more. But it may also be a time when they get freed up to do a lot of creative stuff that they couldn't do because they were stuck in traffic going to work 5 days a week and working long hours. The other part of it is that there's many jobs that we just know you don't get more productive by working longer. You're not going to get better software necessarily from making your software engineers work 50 to 60 hours a week instead of, you know, being able to work less. Not everything works out that way, according to that kind of logic. What we need to do is continue to explore and continue to see how we can make this change for everybody happen.
Now, can I ask, how does the mechanism work? So if it's, let's say, 32 hours, does that mean you still get paid as if you're working 40 hours, but you're just doing the 32?
So the bill Senator Sanders introduced, does say that 32 hours and no reduction in pay. My bill does not do that. My bill just says 32 hours and you're in overtime pay. Senator Bill, does 32 hours a week, overtime pay after 32 hours, but no reduction in pay. I didn't write into my bill that guarantee that people would be paid what they are paid now. Under my bill, the employer could make a decision. You can see where the employer might say, I'm not going to pay overtime. I'm just going to pay you your 4 days, your 32 hours, and then I'll hire someone else for that fifth day of work. That would have the effect of creating more jobs. And that was one of the strategies of the original 40-hour work week, or actually what they were trying to do in the 30s was the idea was that it would increase labor or increase jobs. But, you know, we've been experiencing kind of a tight job market, not enough employees. And my bill, just as it is, would give workers more leverage. The employer would have to make this calculation. Will I be able to be just as productive by hiring another worker to do that fifth day of work? Or would it make more sense for me to just offer you the option of working that overtime and getting a basically, I think, it equates out to a 10% or 15% increase in pay. So under my bill, everybody who is subject to the law would get a raise. You know, it's not that much different than saying let's raise the minimum wage. But actually, there's more flexibility in the way my bill is written than just saying let's raise the minimum wage. It does give the employer some measure of choice.
For someone who's a layman and not sure how it works within Congress, if you have a bill and Bernie Sanders has a bill, does it just try to see who's the one that could get it, or you just negotiate together to figure out and compromise between the two of you fellas, or how do these, just out of curiosity, how do they play out?
Well, so it's fundamentally how bills work is whoever can gain the most support for their idea. And I'm not opposed to what Bernie is saying. It's a matter of tactics and strategy about what we can get done. Ultimately, it's the support of the people. If the American people want something and they like it, and they're willing to sort of say, my vote for you is dependent on whether you're willing to advance this idea. So people who listen to your podcast, you know, they start writing into their member of Congress on a bipartisan basis. I mean, it's like, I just was speaking to a Republican that I know. He says, by the way, I'm on board with your 4-day work week. You know, it's like, so how it works is that bills that pass each house, if they're different, they go to a conference, and they have to be identical, the both bills, and then they go back and pass, and then the president's willing to sign them. So we need to talk about the 4-day work week in terms of equity as well. Again, technology and productivity need to be put into the service of all of us, not just a few of us.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.